Hey, everybody, welcome to another Peck Report. Who are the Nephilim and who are the Anunnaki? Are these possibly both the same thing? That's what we're going to be talking about today. If you haven't had a chance to do so, make sure you subscribe to this channel, click the bell for notifications, and just know that I post every day multiple times throughout the day, at least at the time of this recording. So just check back at this channel often if YouTube doesn't notify you. Also, go to joshpeckdisclosure.com. There's a lot of great stuff there that you can check out, a lot of good materials. And if you scroll just a little bit below this video, you will see some Josh Peck merchandise. You can do that, or if you just want to donate to the channel, that's fine too. Or you can become a Peck patron. Lots of options, and all of that can be found at joshpeckdisclosure.com and on this YouTube channel. So it's popular among shows like Ancient Aliens to promote this idea that Anunnaki were comparable to, you know, the Elohim in the Bible. When Elohim in the Bible is understood to be God. So now Elohim as a term is a lot more broad. In actual Hebrew, Elohim basically means a spiritual being of any kind. So the way that Dr. Michael Heiser puts it, God is an Elohim, but not every Elohim is God. It doesn't ascribe attributes. It's just basically a spiritual being of any kind is an Elohim. So when it comes to the Anunnaki, that's a common thing talked about on shows like Ancient Alien and in our culture, really, who the Anunnaki were. So central to ancient astronaut theory and author Zechariah Sitchin's narrative, this group of mythic beings, they're known as the Anunnaki. Zechariah Sitchin claimed that the Anunnaki crossed their own DNA with that of Homo erectus in order to create mankind for the purpose of using humans as slaves to mine gold and other minerals. And today these Anunnaki are often portrayed as the equivalent of the Old Testament creator God. Now, again, this is absolutely incorrect. Dr. Michael Heiser has put out a lot of excellent work and research. Check him out on why Zechariah Sitchin has been wrong about this. But how do we think about the Anunnaki? How should we think about the Anunnaki? What were these beings? You know, what does the cuneiform corpus actually say about the Anunnaki and other mythic beings? How does the version of these beings and their activities presented in ancient astronaut media compare with how they were truly represented in the ancient world? So Mount Hermon is located at the southern end of the anti-Lebanon mountain range, straddling the borders of Syria and Lebanon. Hermon's highest peak reaches 9,232 feet or 2,814 meters. Gilgamesh was renowned in the ancient world for obtaining knowledge from the pre-flood or antediluvian world, as stated by the Ugarit epic of Gilgamesh. We get that from lines 5-9, which says, "He explored everywhere the seats of power. He knew the totality of wisdom about all things. He who traveled the distant road to Utnapishti, who crossed the ocean, the wide sea, as far as the sunrise, he brought back tidings from the antediluvian age." Now, these passages bring us full circle with Lipinski's interpretation of the old Babylonian version of the Gilgamesh epic, where the ancient king journeyed to Mount Hermon, which is said to be the abode of the Anunnaki. Now, the concept of ancient knowledge from the pre-flood world is actually inherent in many Eastern traditions. So, for example, there's a similar story in the apocryphal Book of Jubilees about Canaan, a son of the biblical Arphaxad. It says, this is Jubilees 8:1-5. It says, "And the son grew, and his father taught him writing, and he went to seek for himself a place where he might seize for himself a city. And he found a writing which former generations had carved on the rock, and he read what was thereon, and he transcribed it and sinned owing to it, for it contained the teaching of the watchers in accordance with which they use to observe the omens of the sun and moon and stars and all the signs of heaven. And he wrote it down and said nothing regarding it, for he was afraid to speak to Noah about it, lest he should be angry with him on account of it. Again, that is Jubilees 8, 1 through 5. Now, interestingly, there's several ancient sources which suggest that Gilgamesh himself was a half-god, lower G god, or semi-divine being of gigantic stature. According to the Sumerian kings list, Gilgamesh was the fifth king of Uruk, who reigned sometime between 2800 and 2600 BC. Now, while there are traditions considering the father of Gilgamesh to be King Lugalbanda, the Sumerian kings list states that his true father was a Lilu spirit, a high priest of Kulaba. And he is described in the epic as two-thirds god. Again, lower G god. Now, Gilgamesh is believed to have attained victory over the kings of Kish, centralizing Uruk's power, and tradition has him expanding the city of Uruk, including his temple precinct and walls. So in several fragments of a 12th century BC copy of the Gilgamesh epic discovered at ancient Ugarit, Gilgamesh is described as, quote, surpassing all other kings, renowned for bodily stature, end quote. That is from line 16. And again, as, quote, Gilgames, renowned for bodily stature, hero born in Uruk, budding wild bull, end quote. That's lines 18 through 19. Now, lines 34 through 36 of the Ugarit Gilgamesh offer specific details on Gilgamesh's size. It says, quote, 11 cubits was his height, 4 cubits the width of his chest, a triple cubit was his foot, and a reed length his legs, end quote. Now, according to these measurements, Gilgamesh would have stood between 16 and 18 feet tall, 4.8 to 5.4 meters tall. In connection to Gilgamesh being a giant, the fragmentary Book of Giants from the Dead Sea Scrolls names several Nephilim giants as Oya, Mahwe, Haya, and Gilgamesh. So, returning to the subject of Mount Hermon, Gilgamesh is not the only ancient giant directly associated with this prominent locale. Several Old Testament books, the Book of Numbers, Deuteronomy, Book of Joshua, they record the battle of Moses and the Israelites against Og, the Amorite king of Bashan. In Deuteronomy 3:11, Og is described as, quote, of the remnant of giants, end quote, in his bed, or according to some sarcophagus, but it was most likely a magical ritual kind of thing, is measured as 9 cubits long and 4 cubits wide, meaning that Og himself may have been 12 or 13 feet in height. Now, in Joshua 4:5, it's revealed that Og reigned in Mount Hermon and in Sakaya and in all Bashan, a region which would include the slopes of Mount Hermon and the Golan Heights. Now, still another factor connecting the Anunnaki with the story of the Watchers and their offspring is their status as underworld beings. So in Mesopotamian cycles, the Anunnaki are frequently depicted as fates or judges of the dead who occupy the subterranean realm or function as spirits of the earth. In tablets discovered at Nippur from around 2000 BC, the Anunnaki are the seven judges, underworld entities that accompany Eresh-Kigal, queen of the subterranean realm. When Ishtar descends and is brought before the assembly, they fasten their eyes of death upon her, causing her to perish, apparently. Now, the mountain abode of the Canaanite god El is also frequently associated with secret or hidden natural springs of underground rivers. Lipinski associates these connotations with the sources of the Jordan River, one of which is a spring of Benias, originating at the foot of Mount Hermon. He furthermore elaborates that the mountain was considered in ancient times to cover one of the outlets of the deep or ocean from which came the waters of the flood, and an eruption of the subterranean ocean on which the earth is believed to rest. Now, in 1st Enoch, God commands the archangel Michael to, quote, go bind Semyaza and his associates who have united themselves with women, bind them fast for 70 generation in valleys of the earth, end quote. That is 1st Enoch 10:11-12. While Raphael is commanded, quote, bind Azazel hand and foot and cast him into the darkness, make an opening in the desert, which is in Dudael, and cast him therein. That is 1st Enoch 10:4. Now, there's also references to the fate of the watchers in the New Testament books, including 2 Peter, which states, God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness. That's 2 Peter 2:4. The word translated as hell in this verse is actually the Greek Tartarus, referencing the deepest underworld of Greek mythology, the prison of the Titans. So not only were the Titans giants, but like the Anunnaki, they were offspring of an earth goddess, Gaia, and a sky deity, Uranus. Some scholars consider it likely that the Greek mythos was largely based on the older Eastern mythologies. The same concept is repeated again in the book of Jude, verse 6, which mentions, quote, the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness, end quote. So the true identity of the Anunnaki, it's widely known that the archetypical myth cycles of the Mesopotamian and Near Eastern traditions share a common origin, and that the subjects of these cycles also appear in the biblical, extra-biblical, and even Quranic texts. The purpose of what we're talking about now is to identify the specific mythic concept behind the Anunnaki in the ancient world. So contrary to a lot of popular literature and other media of today, the evidence recorded by the academic research of scholars and a comparative study of the actual cuneiform and other ancient texts indicate that the true identity of the Anunnaki is to be found in the Eastern tradition of a group of half-gods spawned by crossbreeding between divine beings and mortal females at Mount Hermon in the Anti-Lebanon mountain range. These beings are often associated with knowledge from the world before a great deluge and were later assigned roles in the underworld. This would suggest that rather than making the Anunnaki the equivalent of the Elohim who created man in the book of Genesis, they should more properly be compared to the Nephilim and the fallen angels described in Genesis chapter 6, 1st Enoch, and several other extra-biblical texts. That is the true identity of the Anunnaki. Ancient aliens got it all wrong. Dr. Michael Heiser is an excellent resource for this kind of study. You should check him out. And if you haven't had a chance to do so, make sure you subscribe to this channel. Please click the bell. If you feel led to, you can donate. You can go to joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. joshpeckdisclosure.com/donate. You can donate there. You can find me on Patreon. Patreon.com/Josh Peck, and you can help out the channel there. You can help out the website. You can help out this community. There are several ways to donate, or you can just leave a comment. You can share this video. You can get a conversation going. You can do that. So if you would do that, that would be great. This has been another Peck Report. I should mention, too, if you want some T-shirts, coffee mugs, phone cases, there are several options available. If you're viewing this on YouTube, just scroll a little bit under the video and you will see them there. And if you don't see them there, just go to joshpeckdisclosure.com and click on the Josh Peck merch link. All right, this has been another Peck Report. Thank you so much for joining. Until next time, take care and God bless.